Trend number one, global governance versus jurisdictional competition. Contrary to what some people believe, competition and free markets represent the best way to handle any and all human activities. This is as true for nations and cities as it is for companies and individuals. Consider for a moment the diverging paths taken by Europe and Asia over the past millennium. From the fall of the Western Roman Empire at around 500 AD until about 1300, Europe was an economic backwater. Meanwhile, India, China, and the Islamic world were relatively advanced. Then, Europe experienced the Renaissance, the Enlightenment, and the Industrial Revolution, while the empires of Asia languished. By the middle of the 19th century, the entire globe was effectively controlled, both economically and politically, by the nations of Europe and the republics they spawned in North America. Virtually the entire scientific revolution that raised per capita global GDP by more than 3,200% over the past 200 years has come from those nations. This is evidenced by the near monopoly they hold on Nobel Prizes in physics, chemistry, and medicine. What accounts for this dramatic shift in wealth and power? There are several explanatory factors. But the most powerful and definitely the most underestimated is the phenomenon we call jurisdictional competition. What is jurisdictional competition? It's what happens when governments are forced to adopt better policies because labor, capital, and ideas have a realistic ability to cross borders in search of more favorable conditions. Jurisdictional competition functions just like competition among businesses. Governments realize that they must compete with one another in a Darwinian contest for survival. The countries that are at the center of the competition for taxes and the loyalties of people become more competent, wealthier, and more resilient over time. Meanwhile, countries that have de facto monopolies become poorer, less effective, and less resilient. Eventually, the most competitive countries, like England, take over the weaker, less effective ones, like India, and redeploy their assets. More importantly, those countries that willingly compete and innovate, like the Netherlands in the 17th century, quickly eclipse those that resist change, like 17th century Spain. As Nobel laureate Gary Becker expressed this concept, competition among nations tends to produce a race to the top, rather than to the bottom, by limiting the ability of powerful and voracious groups and politicians in each nation to impose their will at the expense of the interests of the vast majority of their populations. This was echoed by the legendary Milton Friedman, who asserted, "Competition among national governments in the public services they provide and in the taxes they impose is every bit as productive as competition among individuals or enterprises in the goods and services they offer for sale and the prices at which they offer them." The benefits of jurisdictional rivalry cannot be overstated. As Daniel K. Mitchell of the Cato Institute observes, it has given us modernity itself. Throughout the Dark Ages, while Europeans were living in squalor, other nations, such as China, were relatively advanced. But then, as the Industrial Revolution took hold, the empires of Asia diminished. Europe was blessed with no uniform authority that could halt or suppress economic developments through the plundering of businessmen and entrepreneurs by excessive taxes. There was no central government that could dictate the rise and fall of particular industries as its priorities changed. Because this competitive struggle was not hindered in the European nation-states, the tremendous opportunity for modern capitalism emerged. It was centuries later, when this competitive environment in Europe began to erode, that Jacques Turgot observed the opportunity in America, noting how it would oblige the European governments to be just and enlightened. In other words, they would be motivated to progress back towards the conditions of jurisdictional competition and compete for mobile capital. It's the competition for this mobile capital that is able to cross borders that induces governments to adopt better policies. It's a tool for restraining excessive government and for suppressing the tendency of politicians to overtax and overspend. Governments that get too greedy and try to overtax end up getting penalized by a flight of capital, both human and monetary. The fragmentation and capital mobility that are inherent in jurisdictional competition act as a brake on oppressive behavior, a deterrent to widespread political plundering, and in general provides an escape from crippling exploitations by governments. There are other benefits as well. International competitiveness preserves peace. It prevents governments from working in collusion to exploit their citizens. And it makes it hard to maintain and expand a burdensome welfare state, since producers are free to leave the system. To win this battle, countries must ensure freedom for individuals and companies to take action that are in their own economic self-interest. And if any country fails to deliver an environment on par with its neighbors, a climate of open jurisdictional competition makes it possible for people to flee a bad situation, whether it is high taxes or restrictive regulations. They then move to where they can benefit from better policies in other jurisdictions. That's why Western Europe and the United States are awash in economic refugees. And, of course, this is what drives the famous Laffer curve, which demonstrates that there is a tipping point with rising tax rates. As the rate goes up, at some point there will be no more increase in revenue because people will elect to leave the jurisdiction, or businesses won't start up or enter the area. In short, it reflects the power of people to vote with their feet. Furthermore, in the United States, we not only benefit from jurisdictional competition with other countries, but we benefit from competition among the various states. The opposing models of jurisdictional competition and global governance were put to the test in the Cold War. The Soviet Union and its Warsaw Pact satellites operated with the centralized mindset of all monopolies, and was motivated by the purpose of implementing that model globally. Meanwhile, the United States, its NATO allies, and Japan encouraged jurisdictional competition among each other and, to a more limited degree, among the various states and provinces within those nations. And once again, history vindicated jurisdictional competition. The Warsaw Pact and the Soviet Union collapsed. Many former Warsaw Pact nations joined the EU. And Russia's GDP is now less than 12% of U.S. GDP. Nevertheless, a new tug of war has emerged between those who want to strengthen monopolistic global governance regimes, primarily through multilateral treaties, and those who want to maximize jurisdictional competition everywhere. Interestingly, this running battle started with the collapse of the Warsaw Pact in 1989. That event destroyed the biggest barrier to worldwide jurisdictional competition and offered the promise of the free flow of talent, capital, and other resources across borders. At the same time, it revealed to many of us the intellectual bankruptcy of the global governance concept. Short term, the primary result was an uneven explosion of affluence across the developing world. But the results of jurisdictional competition are on display in the developed world as well. Consider these examples. After the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, which raised listing standards, was passed in 2002, many foreign companies shifted their underwritings away from the United States. London benefited when 14 of the top 20 IPOs launched from 2005 to 2008 came from outside the UK to be listed on the London Stock Exchange. In New York, only 4 of the top 20 IPOs came from outside the US. Listings on U.S. exchanges dropped from a peak of 8,823 in 1997 to only 5,401 in 2008, a drop of 39%. This largely represents U.S. companies leaving for more welcoming environments in other countries. And in April 2012, the United Kingdom raised its top tax rate to 50%. This move, plus EU restrictions on borrowing by hedge funds, has caused many hedge funds to move to more hospitable places such as Singapore, which does not have a capital gains tax. Even within countries, the effects of jurisdictional competition can be seen. The state of Illinois is a prime example. In January 2011, the state increased its personal income tax rate by 67%. And raised the corporate tax rate to 9.5%. To stop the exodus of more than 24 companies this caused, the governor had to dole out $230 million in corporate subsidies. This action nearly negated the increase in corporate tax receipts of about $300 million. The tax rate increases were meant to generate income to plug a financial hole. But because the state needed to rescind this corporate increase on a case-by-case basis for so many businesses because of jurisdictional competition, there are still unpaid bills totaling $8 billion. A sounder way to increase revenue would have been to create a friendlier tax and regulatory climate for all businesses, which would have attracted companies, increased jobs, and raised more taxes, even with a lower rate. That would have been leveraging the power of jurisdictional competition rather than falling victim to it. Considering this trend, we provide the following forecasts. First, despite resistance from entrenched powers, globalization will dramatically increase the intensity of jurisdictional competition through at least 2030. Economic globalization will undermine the rationale for increased global governance as countries jockey for advantage. Nevertheless, attempts to increase this governance will continue. For example, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD, whose membership is dominated by the European welfare states, is seeking to gain the power to tell member countries, including the United States, what is acceptable tax policy. Multilateral treaties, such as the Law of the Seas Treaty and the Kyoto Protocol, that are designed to create artificial limits on jurisdictional competition, will also be pushed by countries that cannot achieve their objectives in a free market. If successful, such overreaching power would curtail global competition. However, the trends editors believe that those countries are on the losing side of history. And competition will ultimately force all governments to either adapt or die. Some likely will retreat, like North Korea, while others, like South Korea, will surge. Those that accept this reality early will reap the benefits. Second, growth enabled by information technology will make the greatest impact on those states and countries that have the most economic freedom. The approaching deployment phase of the fifth techno-economic revolution will transform entire economic sectors as they integrate new infotech products and services. These developments will involve both new and established companies, but one of the characteristics they will increasingly share is a lack of concern for political boundaries. They will be drawn to the jurisdictions that offer the best environments for growth and profit. Economies that fail to grasp this truth and continue to subject their populations to restrictive policies will sink in a slow demise. Third, over the next 5 years, we'll see some of the most dramatic examples of jurisdictional competition play out among the various U.S. states. Already, California is witnessing a mass exodus of jobs and wealthy individuals due to excessive taxation, litigation, and regulation. At the same time, its robust welfare programs act as a powerful magnet for unemployed immigrants, particularly from Mexico. Coupled with high wages and benefits paid to state and local employees, this has already led to municipal bankruptcies and could eventually lead to a state bankruptcy. Meanwhile, as the mirror image of California on almost all of these metrics, Texas is expected to thrive.